and I are somewhat from different cuts of cloth, but I really appreciate watching him and how he ministers, and so it's great fun to have him here. They're from Rock Family. He's from Rock Family. His wife Kim couldn't be here, but they're from Rock Family Church in Colorado Springs. I've been preparing you for him because of his creativity. And he is an urban guy, and so, you know, I told him last night, and he's had great fun when he found the Stoneham folks over here. I didn't introduce them. So Rebecca Marshall Frazier from the town of Stoneham, Colorado. The growing metropolis of Stoneham. They moved to town, and the population, based on their 9 people, doubled. And so there's 14 people right in the town of Stoneham, which is kind of north and west of Fort Morgan. Is that? Yeah. So anyway, Chapel of the Plains there. So if you want to get next to them, why great. But anyway, Dean was thrilled with the whole rural thing. So what we're going to do is we're going to just turn this over to Dean and give us a little history and whatever you want to talk about, and then we'll ask questions.
Okay. Started ministry in 1981, and so I've been doing this about 31 years. Started in youth ministry as a student youth ministry pastor, and thought I was going to be the gray-haired 70-year-old youth pastor, thought I was going to do this forever and ever. So I was an assistant youth pastor in Dallas for 3 years at a very, very large church. That would have been 1981 to 84. And at that time, churches of 5,000 were like unheard of. And so was assistant youth pastor there for 3 years, and then went to Plano, Texas, which is a northern suburb, started in a church plant as the first staff member to actually come on board at the church there. And served with Pastor Gerald Brooks for 10 years. A great resource for leadership. If you'll jot down growingothers.com is Pastor Gerald's website. It's called growingothers.com. Some great leadership teaching for the church leaders. And so he's really a mentor pastor to me. Worked for him for 10 years. Then moved to Tulsa, where I was youth pastor from 95 to 2000. And then in 2000, we relocated to Colorado Springs, where I had gone to high school at. My family had moved to Colorado when I was 14, 15. And I'd always had in my heart to come back to Colorado. I loved the mountains and skiing, but there was something more there. And so I moved back to Colorado Springs in 2000, thinking I'm going to do student ministry. There were no churches that needed a youth pastor. And so I did the road traveling gig for 4 years and did a Family First conference. It was a parent-teen conference, youth conferences, and that kind of thing. I hated the road because I'm a local church relationship guy. I don't like to come in and, you know, that evangelist can come in and they love to preach and then run away. I like to have relationships. But it was a bridge. And so then... In March of 2003, the Lord had been, I call it my butterfly. It would flutter up about being a senior pastor, and I would swat it down. No, I'm a youth guy. And that butterfly would flutter up, and I'd smack it down. And March 5th, 2003, I'm a nighttime person. Those of you who pray in the morning, God bless you. I cover you at night between 11 and 1. And so I was up praying, and that thing fluttered up, and I said, God, what is that? And he says, do you really want to know? And I said, yeah, I've been hearing this in my heart for the last 4 to 5 months. And it was like he just went, pulled back the curtain, and I wrote down I'd walk and pray, and I wrote down on a yellow notepad much of what Rock Family Church is today of a family emphasis was a result of that. So in April of 2004, we started a church plant Bible study. In June of 2004, we launched our church with 52 people. Half of those were teenagers because you attract who you are. We were middle-aged with 3 teenagers at the time, and so we attracted families with teenagers. And so I was the first pastor, the first youth pastor. And we had 25 kids that night in our first youth service. So almost half or better were teenagers. We had no kids, no nursery. We had no babies. We had a nursery for 3 months before we had anybody with small children come. So our church is 8 years old, and we started from scratch, from zero. No money, no people, no staff, no facilities. We were church in a trailer for a year, and we're meeting in elementary school. Then after a year, we moved into a lease facility, kind of a retail rented about 13,000 square feet. And then in 2008, I think Glenn has kind of given you guys a window, we moved into this place called Mr. Biggs Family Fun Center and rented their auditorium, and fit our culture of family, 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 family was our culture. And so we were in there for 4 years, and then in January of this year, we just moved into a, it had been a Methodist church. They have two campuses, and they were kind of going belly up, trying to hold two. So they were trying to sell the one campus we couldn't afford to buy. So we said, we'll do a lease with an option to buy. So we came in, renovated that place, and so we're 8 years in. And so that's us.
They also have four services every weekend, including a Friday night service, which was one of the reasons that the guy that got us together wanted me to meet him. I'm at least as far in the box as Dean is out of the box, and so his idea, and I just, you know, you all been with me for a couple of years, and I have distinct opinions about how things are supposed to work, and Friday nights didn't fit in that. And so I was teaching at the Bible school that both of us have taught at, and on a Friday, and so I stayed over for services and went to their Friday night service, where the vision is start your weekend with God, which was just a phenomenal learning experience to see somebody see that in an urban center where skiing and boating,
camping,
and everything happened on the weekend. They got off their jobs on Friday and left the church culture for the weekend, and they started a Friday night service, and they now have three Sunday morning services as well. And so, for those of you who and actually Randy's not here, we got a multiple service guy here that had a funeral today. But anyway, please know that there's probably not anything that you can ask Dean that he won't be able to kind of give you an idea that you might not have thought of. He's going to talk about creativity. But what we want to do, in keeping with what we've done in the past, is try and get him to talk a little bit about what his life has been like as a minister. And so I think the first question I'd like you to answer maybe is kind of maybe one or two or three of the greatest surprises, things you weren't necessarily prepared for or God didn't warn you about, and that kind of stuff, if you've got something like that that would...
Good surprises or bad surprises?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. It's open-ended.
I think one of my big surprises, the church was just about 2 years old, and our emphasis is family and teenagers and kids. And so one of the first staff members we hired was to bring on a youth pastor. And about 2 years in, I followed that, and I would encourage you to listen to those little proddings. I had this, my youth pastor comes in on a Sunday morning and he sits down in my office before service, and just out of my heart, I said, "Are you and Marie doing okay?" "Yeah, boss, why? What?" "I don't know. Is your marriage okay?" I just said it out of the inspiration of my heart. No, we're good. That was May. In July, his wife called me, and they had a disagreement. He had left for 5 days, didn't answer his cell phone, and come to find out he'd been having an affair with an 18-year-old in our youth group. And I was not prepared for that. And I was taking personal blame. And you guys might not have staff, but you have leadership and deacons and elders and board members and so forth. And so it would be on that same level. And I was like, "God, I really felt like I knew I was supposed to hire him. I was like, God, did I miss it by putting this person in this position? I was blaming myself. You know, we tend to overdo that sometimes. And this is the statement that set me free. The person you are firing is not the person you hired. You hired with good integrity. You put that person in leadership, whether it's volunteer or paid. You put that person in leadership out of the goodness of the integrity that you knew and the following the peace in your heart. And that really set me free because, you know, we tend to kick ourselves and just the pain that causes. Shifting out of, I don't know if have any of you served in other, have you guys always been youth, or I'm sorry, been senior pastors? Have any of you served as associates or youth or worship? That was my big revelation crossing over, I think, was, you know, I always go, oh yeah, I'm sure it's really tough for you as being senior pastor, but you don't know what I'm dealing with. And I think one of my biggest wake up calls was crossing over from the associate side to the senior pastor side and going, if we run short, I'm the person who doesn't get a salary. If I'm carrying this thing on my back, and I know Jesus, his load is easy and we need to put it in his hands, but you carry the weight of the people, the budget, the facilities, the staff, all of those things. And so that was probably my biggest revelation moving from a supportive ministry to the senior ministry, was just the stress, the strain, the challenges, the worry, the fear, you know, that tries to attack you, attack your marriage and your family.
So tell us something about the survivability of marriage and ministry.
I got a lot there. I would say one of the biggest things would be remember who the enemy is, because it's real easy when there's stress. It's real easy when none of this has ever happened to you, that someone gets disgruntled with you or the church and starts to spew, you know, and that poison starts to spread and they start to. It hurts when they say things that are untrue. You know, you could pass a polygraph. You know, you can. They're just flat out lies about you or your character, or your integrity, and that hurts. And it's real easy when the arrows start flying and coming in to start lashing out to whoever is closest to you and to your spouse, to your wife, to your husband, and. Kim and I have had to constantly remind ourselves, you're not my enemy. Because what is the enemy trying to do is if he can, as Jesus said, a house divided cannot stand. So if he can divide the husband and wife on an issue, on frustrations or challenges, then he's got entrance into your life and into your ministry. And so it's been us pausing and saying, I'm sorry. I said that with an attitude towards you. I apologize. I've been really loaded down today. I just dealt with this. So being transparent, sharing about our days is huge. I'm a huge advocate. I even challenged Glenn and Tracy. I said, so where have you guys been on vacation? Because, you know, Mr. Workaholic over here like me. But if someone comes in for marriage counseling to me, the very first question, and they all know I'm going to ask it because I say it from the pulpit, when is the last time you two went on a date? And I'm telling you, 9 out of 10 times that couple that is sit in my office, they do this.
I don't remember the last time.
1978.
when we were coming back, when you were coming to our house, we went by and there's this little bridge in Ray. Tracy remembers because I gave her a promise ring in 1970.
And you didn't even remember.
I'm sorry. She said they're replacing our bridge, and I'm looking at her going, what? Well, they took down this rainbow bridge in Ray and put up this metal thing. Well, evidently I gave her this ring. We're sitting on the couch of my parents' house in the basement watching TV or something. And so I don't know what we're doing. And so I take the little, you know, $298 promise ring out and give it to her. And And by the way, in her jewel box today, that ring still exists.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. And anyway, she says, oh, they're taking our bridge down. Caught me completely by surprise because I didn't know what in the world she
was. So I encourage couples to go on regular dates, guarding your family time. Monday is my pastor's day out, and I preach it from the podium. Everyone knows if you call me on my cell phone, it says, this is Pastor Dean Hawk. Sorry, I missed your call. I'll return your call as soon as can. If you're calling on Monday, that is my day out with my wife and my family. I'll return this call on Tuesday. Nobody calls me on Monday. Nobody. Sometimes friends do. They forget.
And I get the same answer, you know.
And then sometimes when it's a friend I know, I'll pick it up and I'm like, hey, what's up? And they're like, why are you answering? You're supposed to be on a date. And so people help enforce those values. But I know that every Monday for lunch, Kim and I are going out for lunch. It might be Taco Bell. It might be a $6.95 date. It might be a hike in the park. But we know that is our day that we are spending together. And so we look forward to that. And then we take at least one honeymoon a year. No kids. It is the two of us. It might be a long weekend. We love to take a cruise because you know what you're paying for, your food, your entertainment, and your lodging is all locked in there. And there's crazy, stupid deals out there that you can go for $500 for a week outside of your airlines. And so I've just scheduled my honeymoon for February for Kim's birthday, and I just scheduled it on Monday.
Wow.
So
I took Tracy for a long weekend last week and 2 weekends ago to Hastings, Nebraska. When I preached seven times. But she was blessed. Maybe last question, depending on how long it goes.
I'll be short.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. But tell me about the financial pressures of starting a church. I know that's an ambiguous question, but
when we planted,
any of all those things. Many of these guys, I mean, I look around and I see Pastor Steve, who their church is in the middle of that consideration. What do? We're busting at the seams. Brian has a 8,000 square foot. I don't know if that's right, but a building they're just redoing. Travis has a 20 or 25,000 square foot metal building that they've built the first 7 or 8,000 square feet. And you walk through one of the doors at the back of his church and you're in this cavernous cave.
Hello!
That's not been had anything done. So that's really what I'm looking for, something.
Okay, then I know how to answer that now. I would tell you that every progress of Rock Family Church has been the result of a bold, daring, scary faith step. We're in elementary school. It's $1,200 a month for 4 weekends. That's a nice budget for a startup church. $1,200 a month for all your facilities. Switching to, we're going to lease now a facility that's going to cost us, I think at that time, $5,000 a month. So we quadrupled what we were paying. And, so at that time there were maybe about 100 in our church, and I was throwing out to them, guys, we have this facility. They were asking $7 a square foot. We've negotiated down to $3.50 a square foot. So never be afraid to lowball, because to me that's giving God opportunity. If it's a contractor to finish it out, whatever it is, I always ask massively low. Could you do that for us free? Could you paint that for us free? We'll give you a tax write-off. What does your business need? I just ask low. And my realtor thought I was stupid. He said, I'm not going to counter with $3 a square foot. I said, yeah, that's what I'm offering. It's $3 a square foot. And he says, they aren't going to take that. Their counter was $350. We were at $7. But the space had been sitting there empty. So there's that balance between being stupid and overcommitting financially, but seeing that if we cut this lean and we can do this, same token, after we were leaving that facility and going, we're going to rent a family fun center we're going to rent their, huge auditorium every weekend. There were a group of people, always know, you know, it's the 80-20-20-80 principle. There's going to be at least 20% of the people who will fight you tooth and nail, and you're missing God. We're going under. You're going to run this church in the ground. But every time we've taken that step of faith and made that bold move, it's opened the door. So when we started the church, we started a Bible study in April. Our plan was to run April, May, June, and July, run the Bible study through the summer. And then in August, when kids are going back to school, that's when you launch a church. Every church planning book on the planet will tell you, you don't launch a church in the summer. But there's another thing you have to follow is momentum. Momentum is extremely hard to get, but once you have it, if I've got a church bus out here, the hardest part, you drop it in neutral, is for me to get it moving from standing still to 1 mile an hour. Once I get that bus rolling, it's easy to push it and get it going a little bit further. So at all cost, never intervene with momentum. So we started our church plant Bible study. 30 days in, there are about between 30 to 40 people coming and saying, we're not going to church anywhere. We had a Wednesday night. We're not going to church anywhere. Why can't we have Sunday morning services?
Well, it doesn't fit in my game plan that we're supposed to wait until August.
But there was momentum. There was a surge there. And I said, well, what do we need? I hadn't even thought of what we need. We need a sound system. We need nursery things. We need all these things. And threw together, I got this cheapo depot sound system, some drums and some, you know, a keyboard and whatnot for about $14,000. And we launched a church with $14,000. So, but it was saying, we're going to go, it doesn't make sense on paper to do this, but the momentum is there and it's going to be a bold, daring move. So there you go.
So have you ever been discouraged in wondering if it's worth it, and if you'll ever see what you feel like God has put in your heart come to pass? And if so, what would you say to the pastors that are there?
Discouragement, depression, frustration, anxiety, stress, I would say is, and I'm not even kidding anymore. I mean, I'll be funny, but it's something that I battle daily. Some days it's worse than others, but I don't know where you guys are, but it's never ending. That little voice saying you're not going to make it. That little voice when you have an off, you know what you need per weekend to make your monthly budget. You know what has to come in, and you're doing good. And one weekend, it's 50% less. And you're going, we're not going to meet budget unless this last weekend we have what we normally have and above. And that little voice that says, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. And you're going to go under. That's where you daily have to be at the throne. And I used to think, oh, you shouldn't have to tell pastors this, but I'll be blunt. There's been times in my life where I didn't have a daily devotional time. I was too busy being Martha and busy about the business of the kingdom and not spending time at the master's feet. And when I realized that my frustration or anxiety or discouragement is high, is typically when I haven't been at the feet of Jesus. The more I stay there, keeping myself spiritually refreshed, the less of a voice those voices have in my life.